Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
You're tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
Hey there, welcome back to Origins, our show.
Start over.
Hey there, welcome back to Origins, broadcasting from the Line Hotel here in Washington, D.C. My name's Spike Jurdy. I'm joined today by one of my best friends in the whole farming community. Ian Seletsky is in the studio. Hi, Ian.
Hello, how are you?
It's great to have you here.
Thank you.
I'm going to talk a little bit about how I know you, which is through your dad, Mr. Yep. Seletsky.
Been a long time.
Yeah. And one of the coolest parts about this story is that, you know, I got to know Richfield Farm, your farm in Carroll County, through your dad.
Yes.
And was purchasing from him. Got to know you along the way.
Yes.
And he unfortunately has passed away, but you are continuing the farm. And it's an incredible thing, I think, for me to be working with a farm that goes, you know, through generations.
Yes. It's been 3 years now since he's passed away. Sometimes I very much wish I had his opinions and guidance, but I think I'm doing as best I can without him. So it's kind of interesting, but you know, that happens everywhere, I
guess.
Yeah,
for sure. But it's he was such a great presence at the farmers markets.
And a character.
Yeah, he gave me a hard time every time I was there. And
I try to do my best doing that too.
You're keeping up the tradition.
Yes.
So I really appreciate you taking the time to talk. And you know, having a farm like Richfield that we've been purchasing from for how long it's been?
Oh, it's been a long time.
Okay.
Since, I mean, I think back, you know, with when you had Spike and Charlie still.
Yeah.
So long time.
That goes almost back further than I'd care to talk about.
Yeah.
But it's been
it's
been years and years. And, you know, a produce farm in Carroll County, on how many acres?
I own 50 acres. We bought that in 1985, and my father was farming it while teaching school. Mm-hmm. It was a great way to keep his summers busy, and make a little bit of extra money. And that's kind of when, you know, the whole farmers market things really kind of got going. And you know, the Mid-Atlantic's always been known as like a truck patch. Producing, you know, that's what we were known for. So it's just kind of natural to be, you know, a school teacher, and he liked to play in the dirt, and I just kind of took over from there.
And you guys are now, talk about your business. You're at farmers markets, you're selling.
We do, I guess we're in four farmers markets currently. Baltimore City on Sundays, Towson on Thursdays, and we are at two here in Washington on Saturday, Mount Pleasant and H Street. And we're selling to pretty much every restaurant that we can convince to buy our stuff, and anybody that really wants good stuff, we can get it to them. And we have a small CSA that we do also, and have farm pickup. We deliver to a couple of drop-offs and things like that. So
how's it going? You know, we talk about how difficult it can be to be a farmer right now, especially to be a produce farmer, a farmer that is not growing, you know, huge acreages of commodity soy or corn or whatever. I've had conversations with folks here in the studio about, you know, kind of the economic struggles of being a small-scale farmer in this day and age.
Yeah, it's difficult. It's getting more difficult every year. I mean, the record-keeping and the bookkeeping part aspect is something that, you know, I know my dad never thought about 30 years ago. And that really is becoming a big thing, and it really eats up a large portion of your time every week. I know I take every Monday basically just to do payroll and every other bookkeeping thing that I need to get taken care of. So it really cuts into your farming time. But I guess that's just part of running a business nowadays.
Are there particular things you need to do to comply with? I mean, how much is the county, state, federal government looking over your shoulder?
They're everything from, you know, fertilizer application to pesticide use to just in general tax, you know, sales tax and things. It just seems like it never stops, and it seems like every year there's another thing that you've got to worry about writing down somewhere in a log just so it's there. Where it goes from there, I don't know. Someday it's some, you know, there are quite a few people that have just said, you know, enough's enough, and they kind of, you know, quit or almost cut way back so they can get away from it.
People in your neck of the woods, is that?
Yeah, I know, you know, some people that have either quit all in general, you know, completely, or have cut way back and to the point where they can handle everything themselves. Yeah.
You making money?
Yes. This past year we did pretty good. The year before that it was a little bleak. It's not like it was 10 years ago.
How so?
Just market trends are different. People's spending habits are different. You know, it's all cyclical. You see it in the restaurant business. There's also a lot more farms out there now.
There are more farms.
There are more, you know.
Doing.
There's a ton of small local farms that are like almost micro farms, I guess. And they cut into some of the bigger farms, but like, I don't consider myself a big farm compared to other farms that are actually big farms. So it's everybody's fighting for the same piece of the pie.
And do you see that? Is that pie change? That piece of the pie, is that getting bigger, smaller? Is that?
It's getting smaller. So you have to get more efficient. This past year, I think I really did well. The reason I, you know, had a much better year is because I got much more efficient. I cut out a lot of fat. Cut down on some of my expenses that I just decided, you know, I didn't really need that stuff. And it, you know, it shows up in the bottom line. So
what kind of expenses are we talking about?
Just in general, instead of having, I can't think of anything offhand. Like, instead of having printed bags with my name on it, uh-huh. You know, that my wife wanted to do or this or that, you know, just went to simple bags. And, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, if you're saving $5 a case,
it all adds up.
Yeah. And, you know, instead of paying somebody to do deliveries, I was doing deliveries myself last year.
And you're still the kind of farmer that shows up and you work your own farmer's markets. I see you.
Most of them I try to. You know, there are some. Unfortunately, I'm not here in Washington as often as I'd like to be. Just because somebody needs to be at home on Saturdays taking care of everything to get ready for Sundays. But I, you know, that's an awesome part of it. That's why I kind of am doing this, because you'd like to talk to people.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the only reason I sell you stuff is because I make you feel guilty if you don't buy it, you know?
And I hear from every one of the chefs that I work with, is like, yeah, Ian says you always buy more.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, it's actually true.
Yeah, it's great when you would come through the market and I could sucker you into buying something you'd, you know, didn't need, and then the chefs would say, you know, what are we gonna do with this? And I said, I don't care. Spike said we're using it.
Yeah, I have to take the fall for that.
Yeah.
It's happened more often than not. What are you growing these days? I guess I'd like to ask that in kind of like, because I think you've talked about watching kind of trends change the farmers markets and what people want, and also, you know, more competition. And I think it sounds like you're kind of evolving Richfield to deal with some of that.
Yeah, we still grow pretty much everything that we've always grown. We've just changed the quantities. You know, there was a time, I guess, in 2008, 2009, 2010, I had 9 acres of tomatoes planted. I think last year I had at the maybe four. So we've shifted some things and just changed a little bit of this and a little bit of that. Wholesale wise, we do a lot less wholesaling now, which in general, then means I don't need as many people working, so my labor bill's down. I don't need as many boxes to put things in, so that bill's down. And we're, you know, focusing more on trying to get it to somebody that can use it.
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, because tomatoes are still like kind of the poster child for farmers markets and for local, especially in this part of the world.
Yeah.
And you're saying you're less than half of what you used to produce.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I mean, you're a guy that can grow some tomatoes.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you were out at the farm, how many years ago was that? 5-6 years ago? I mean, you saw we had piles of them.
It was incredible.
But, you know, the just not on the restaurant side, because just the general consumer side, instead of buying, you know, 20 pounds of heirloom tomatoes for a week, somebody's buying two now because they can go to a farmer's market 3 days from now and get another two or three or whatever. There's that many farmer's markets around now, too.
You think, is there an oversupply? Are there too many?
There could be.
Are we getting there?
I think we're definitely, there are probably some places that could use some new markets, but there are definitely places that could use a few less markets.
Do you think farmers markets are still a good deal for growers?
I do, and for consumers. You know, I have heard a lot of pushback from certain people thinking, you know, consumers saying, the prices are too expensive at some of the markets they go to. And I tell them, well, just find another farmer's market because there's plenty of them out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know I like to sell things for as much as I possibly can, but I also like to think, you know, there's a point where you can't charge, you know, something ridiculous for something. Somebody's just going to say you're out of your mind doing it.
Well, when you see tomatoes in the market, and there's usually, it seems to be kind of a, I'm not sure if there's an agreed upon price, but it seems like a lot of farmers markets, tomatoes tend to, like when they're in season and when they're everywhere, they kind of hit a...
Yeah, they're kind of is like a plateau. Everybody kind of knows what they should be worth. But there are some people that are selling them for way more than that. And how they continue to sell them when the same product is on another table right next to them, I don't know. But if you can do it, more power to you. But I feel guilty sometimes, and I've told you that before too, and I've sold you something, and you said, oh, that's a great price, and I say, well, honestly, I feel guilty selling it to you for that, because, you know, it seems like a lot for me, but...
It's probably been a while since I said...
Yeah, it has been.
But it's still a good deal. I mean, I look at growers who spend so much time doing the farm work, and then you show up, and you're, you know, an hour or two to set up, 5 or 6 hours in the market and an hour or two to, you know.
Yeah, to tear down.
That's a lot.
And drive home. And, yeah, it's, you know, Saturdays is a 15-hour day. Sundays is a 15-hour day. And Mondays, that's why I choose Mondays to do paperwork. I don't have to move very much. But it's a long, hard day, but it's fun getting to get off the farm and interact with the people. And I guess you get the benefit of actually seeing where your stuff's going.
But you just described, you know, if I can do the math quickly, a 30-hour weekend work weekend.
Yeah.
And it's still worth it to you.
Yeah.
You love it.
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, you know, the restaurant business is that too. So, I mean, yeah, it's great. Especially since, you know, not so much at the, maybe at the farmer's market, but I tell my wife every day that, you know, it's awesome when you're outside at 6 or 5:30 and you watch the sun come up and it's a little foggy or something. It's beautiful. And, you know, there's, you know, a deer standing in front of you or something. It's just awesome.
Well, I will say that you mentioned that the day that we spent out there with the team from Woodbury. And we were driving around in the back of your truck, and
yep,
we were checking out the fields. And like you said, they were full of tomatoes. And then this incredible rainstorm came through.
Yep.
We saw it coming, but we didn't get inside soon enough. But you had a bunch of T-shirts there.
We handed out T-shirts to everybody.
And we all dried off. And then you and your wife made the most amazing grilled cheese sandwiches with your tomatoes on.
Heirloom tomato sandwiches,
yeah. It was incredible.
Yeah. It was fun. My dad talked about that day very often.
It was magical. So one of the things I was hoping you'd talk about is, I don't think when we started working together, you were doing the beans that you're doing now. Or you weren't doing them in maybe the quantities you are now.
No, I don't know if you knew we were doing that at the time, or you weren't using that many of them at the time. My father, that was one of his main things from the very beginning, is he grew a tremendous amount of beans, and he actually delivered them down here to several co-op grocery stores in the D.C. area and Silver Spring and Kensington and all over back in the late 80s. So we grew a tremendous amount of beans. Plus, we sold a huge number of beans in Baltimore to all the Italian ethnic. That's why we grew so many Italian beans and the cranberry beans. And that was just such a huge market. But that market's sort of gone away now. There aren't as many the older Italian generation, the older Greek generation here buying 20 bushel of cranberry beans at one time.
Right.
You know, and that's why maybe you didn't get them, because you didn't see them. We were already sold out.
Which is great. But yeah, it does show how the market's shifting. And, you know, we were happy to kind of step in. And I know that we're excited to have those again at Woodbury this year.
Yeah. Beans is something I love to grow. And I do a pretty good job of it. And I like growing lots of little different kinds here and there. You know, sometimes I kind of grow them before I have a place to sell them. And then I don't actually make much money selling them, but it's still, you know, I eat them that week and I enjoy them. So,
well, the thing that I have been getting from you for years, which I love, are the Roma beans. I
mean, yes,
those are, I think, the
underutilized, yes, underappreciated, and boy, we used to sell so many. I mean, so many, and now I think last year when I plant beans, being that they're all used for the fresh market, I plant every week, so that there's always new beans coming, new beans going into bloom, new beans being harvested every week. Well, I think this past year was the first year that I actually had to start planting Italian beans, Roma beans, every other week or every third week, just because the
demand wasn't there.
The demand isn't there anymore for them.
Well, that's too bad, because that is an amazing.
Oh, bean. They are amazing.
That's the best. Talk about your growing practices. I think you're a grower. We've talked about this. I'm not, you know, surprising you with this question, but you're not organic.
I'm not an organic farm. No, we are a standard, I guess you would call it a conventional farm. I use conventional fertilizers. That in the state of Maryland makes it a little bit simpler with the nutrient management laws.
Tell me why.
Because of not having compost and not having animal manures being used, and it just makes it a little bit easier regulatory-wise, compliance-wise, and food safety-wise. You know, that's a big thing in food safety, is where, you know, making sure your composts or whatnot are clean, you know.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, we are a conventional farm. Conventional fertilizer. I do use pesticides. I try to use as little as possible. Probably the most I do is for herbicides for weed control purposes, because here in the Mid-Atlantic, weed pressure is very, very bad. So most of my pesticide use is for herbicides only. My sweet corn, and I know this is why you enjoy getting my sweet corn, I never spray my sweet corn for bugs. Sometimes it gets a little wormy, but as we'd like to say at the farmer's market, you know, that's what knives were invented for. And it's also a personal thing. I don't want to be exposing myself. I don't want to be exposing my kids. I don't want to be, out in the environment just spraying every 3 days, every 2 days, if I don't have to. Right. If I can still sell the product, make a profit, even though it's not beautiful looking, it still tastes good. And that's another part where I've cut down on some of my expenses, because I'm not doing that. So, a planting of sweet corn doesn't have to gross as much money to still make it profitable. So, that's one of the places. Other things like tomatoes and things, I mean, there's tremendous amounts of disease pressure on tomatoes, and in certain times of the year, squashes. But it seems like you can either spray every 3 days sometimes and still get disease, or you can like spray maybe once every week, or even stretch it further than that. And yes, your stuff might die a little bit quicker, but profit-wise, you're going to be better off.
Especially with tomatoes, I know we've had late blight,
early blight, tobacco mosaics, canker on the root, just a whole unbelievable amount of different things that can affect it. So to make the perfect beautiful round tomato, you have to, if you really want to do it, you got to spray it a lot. So that's why ugly tomatoes are beautiful.
Is there anything that you've just given up growing around here just because of pest pressure or disease pressure?
Well, unfortunately, there are certain types of peppers that I cannot even plant on my farm just because of the disease pressure that's in the soil, and it will be there forever. Fortunately, there are products that you could plant now that would be considered, I guess, a GMO that will allow you to grow that product through diseased soil. So, you know, that's the trade-off. If I don't plant a GMO green pepper, I actually could grow a green pepper on my farm. I mean, it literally would die before I get to harvest pepper.
What is it that's in the soil? What is
the main disease that affects us is Phytophthora.
Uh-huh.
And that stays, it especially comes out on a wet, hot year. You know, you can use practices like raised beds and trickle irrigation and whatnot to limit it. But eventually, if you've got a lot of disease pressure because of the weather, peppers that are not Phytophthora resistant will die.
They just die. Are you using the GMO green pepper to do that, to deal with that, or?
I'm not sure if the couple varieties of peppers that we're raising are GMO. I know they are Phytophthora resistant. I think if they've been bred into that way, I don't think they're actually GMO.
They might just be.
Yeah.
Bread.
Hybridized bread, exactly. To resist that. But, you know, there's other things, you know, GMO-wise, like summer squash that are resistant to Phytophthora and powdery mildew. I'm not currently growing any of those just because, personally speaking, I don't think they taste as good. So
do you have, outside of that consideration, do you have a opinion about GMOs, good, bad, or otherwise?
I know some people were torn on either side. I think if it's a product that's going to allow a small farm to stay in business and make a profit and continue their farming lifestyle, then I think it's a perfectly fine product. You know, if it helps keep development down and, you know, suburbia from spreading, then, you know, I'm for it. Really,
I never thought of that. That GMOs is kind of a way to prevent.
If you look at it from the
it's, yeah, I like that.
So I mean, now, but it's also, it goes back to personal opinion too. If you're for it, everybody's got their own opinion, and you shouldn't have to force your opinion onto somebody else.
Right. And I think that's one of the great things, going all the way back to almost where we started about farmers markets, and the fact that you're there, people, yep, you can have that conversation with your, yep, customer, and it's one of the things that's lacking in our food system. And I think it's how we end up kind of lined up on opposite sides of an issue without ever having a conversation about,
yep,
it.
Yep.
And I couldn't agree more. Is there a way, or can we go back to 1985 when you said this farm started? And, you know, like I said, we've had a lot of conversations here in this room about how difficult it is to be a farmer. I feel like what we do with Woodbury and Rakes Progress is about supporting you guys because you do the hard work in our food system. Can we go back to 1985 and can we ask Ian Seletsky, who knows what he knows now, would you do it again? Would you go into this again?
Oh my. Well, maybe I would do it. Definitely, I probably would definitely do it again. I might not have spent $85,000 on a college degree and 4 years of life off the farm to do it. But I probably still would do it. I think that's kind of hard to go back to. I mean, that's a trick question.
Maybe a little bit. But yeah. I can say I'm really glad you do what you do.
I do love it. I mean, there have been several times where I've thought about quitting in the last 5 years, but I also haven't found a adequate replacement that would, not just monetarily, but stress level wise, peace of mind. So I guess that's probably why we continue doing it.
Well, I appreciate you taking time. You described your week and it's a busy week, and I appreciate you coming down.
This weather this year too, we haven't gotten anything done. I haven't even gotten fava beans planted yet, so I mean it's terrible.
Well, I hope we get some warm, sunny weather, and I hope you can get out there and get the beans in the ground.
Yes.
Ian Seletsky from Richfield Farm, thanks for joining us here on Origins on Full Service Radio.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook @FullServiceRadio. Thanks for listening. All right, that live show just finished here on Full Service Radio at the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Stick with us. We'll be right back with some more live programming soon.